morning, everyone. We'll call to EMWD Board of Directors meeting to order, this being May 15, 2019, time being 9 a.m. Randy, would you honor us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
My pleasure. Please join me in salute to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Council, do we have a reason to add something that has come up on the agenda after the posting?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. An item has come to the attention of my office that arose subsequent to the posting of the agenda that I'd request the board add to the as item 10B to the agenda. It's an item of potential litigation. It is one case, and it would be a new agenda item 10B, conference with legal counsel, Government Code Section 54956.9, one item of potential litigation. So we need a motion to add that to the agenda.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second the motion.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, is there anyone in the audience? This is a time and a place for anyone in the audience that wishes to address the board for anything that is not on today's agenda. And seeing no raised hands or a speaker's card, we'll go on to recognitions. Alan.
Thank you very much, President Sullivan and members of the board. It is a pleasure to acknowledge the completion of our 18th round of the Youth Ecology Corporate Program. Over the past 6 years, more than 200 young adults have successfully completed the 12-week program. Of those program participants, we are excited to say that 22 have been asked to come back for a second cohort, giving them 6 months of work experience. 9 have been brought back as temporary employees, giving them 1 full year of work experience. And 1 participant, Eric Morales, was hired on as a full-time employee as a laboratory analyst in February 2018. Youth Ecology Corps program is just one example of how EMWD continues to demonstrate its role as an exceptional employer, providing sources of employment and professional mentorship while working with the local community. By investing in the youth early on, EMWD builds a competent and skilled workforce for the future. As you know, the program is sponsored by the Riverside County Workforce Development Board and the California Family Life Center that is located in Hemet. I'd like to recognize a few of those members that are here with us today. From the California Family Life Center, I'd like to recognize Mary Jo Ramirez, who is the Executive Director. Lenore De Jesus, who is the Program Administrator. Greg Snow, who is our Program Coordinator. Crew Navigators, Rafaela Palacios, Jose Flores, and Jim Gray. Business Liaison Antonio Mateo. From the Workforce Development Board, we have Leslie Trier, Patrick Ellis, Vice Chair, and we also have Jamil Dada as the Board Chair. Jamil, do you want to say a few words?
Please, if I may, real quick. Thank you all, gentlemen. This is amazing stuff, 6 years. As you know, Riverside County Workforce Development Board is funded by Congress. It's one of 550 workforce boards around the country, but one-third of our funding and all of our policy and programs have to do with youth. And what you're doing with us is preparing our future workforce. So of the 200 youth that Alan was talking about over the last 6 years, virtually every one of them has improved their portfolio. As they go on to college, they learn new techniques, get involved in new industry, new scientific stuff, and they're thinking differently and they're moving forward. So all of us together are making a difference in the lives of these young folks. And you started this. Some other water districts around the state are also doing this now. We want to continue this, please, and hopefully expand this. So thank you again for partnering with us, collaborating to upskill our young people. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jamil. I'd also like to introduce our Civic Spark Water Fellow, Ozzy Martinez, who is over here in the back, who provided professional development seminars for this cohort. At this time, I'd like to invite the administrator for CFLC and Riverside County Workforce Development to go ahead and join Asya off to the side, and to have our board president, Director Randy Record, and general manager Paul Jones to come down here and
help. You just said it's actually you demoted.
Let the borrow your jacket, Ron.
So as a youth, as a colleague, please come on up. Accept your certificate, shake hands with our executive supporters, and then we're going to get a couple photos. So to start off, we have Andrew Kelzar. Next up, we have Vanessa Gonzalez. We have Isaac Sadke. And so we have Sarah Gutierrez. And last we have James Montgomery. Supervisors who are actively involved in mentorship with the youth, and without them we could not do this program. EMW Board and General Manager Paul Jones for your continued support of the program. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Alan, appreciate it. So, Jamil, before you leave, I just want to recognize you. You know, you're a longtime friend, but your enthusiasm and initiative and all this is really important, and doesn't happen without your efforts, so thank you very much.
And we realize that, so thank you so much.
It's my pleasure, and I appreciate your support and friendship. And my health is actually getting better, so in the home stretch, and the results are looking really good, the treatments are working, so. And I am scheduling, I have been working with Jolene, and we have some dates.
To go to the base?
With the new base commander, so
thank you.
Essentially.
Appreciate
that. Well, hopefully the AC going out on the bus in the desert.
Interesting. I mean, it was 102 out in Blythe and the AC went out. Randy kept everybody entertained. I can't tell you that.
Let's just leave it right there.
That was invaluable for me because I learned so much that I didn't know about water.
You know,
I focused on workforce and military, and now I understand. Because I sit on the governor's workforce board, and I do work a lot in Sacramento, so now it helps me. When I'm with legislators on water issues. So thank you for including me. And thank you all again for your support.
Thank you.
Take care. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, before we get into executive reports, I'll take this time. We had a request from Texas Water Conservation Association, which about a month ago, they did an honor for me in Washington, D.C., when they had their couple of senators there, and they actually made me an honorary Texan. And they gave me this hat. And so last week, they called and sent an email saying that they needed to have a picture with my hat on at the board. But I knew it wasn't for me because they believe that Randy Record's a ghost. And so they never see him. So he's infamous in Texas also. So
Somebody's got to take a picture.
Somebody's got to take a picture.
Before that, I also want to add that our relationship with Texas has been extremely valuable for EMWD. There's not too many organizations in California that have the relationship and with the Texas water organizations, and it's helped us on a number of legislative activities and other funding activities in Washington, D.C. So Ron, being an honorary Texan, and the Texas delegation in Congress is interesting because they actually vote together. And they actually coordinate well with their water agencies. So we've had a lot of support from them in a lot of initiatives that have been important to Eastern. And that support's really been attributable to Ron's relationship with the Texas folks. So, Ron, I think you need to be recognized for that. So thank you, Paul.
Can we all stand up and we'll get a picture with the board? That way they can see the full extent of Randy Leffert. Hey, I messed my hair up. Okay, with that, let's go to executive reports, Paul.
Thank you, President Sullivan, members of the board. My written report's included in your board package. Just want to update you on a number of things. One, our classification and compensation study that we're working on with our local union, or our union, IBEW Local 1436, continues to move forward. We're working with our outside consultant, Coffin Associates. The study is really in two phases. The first phase was completed last December, where we looked and did a fairly exhaustive update of the employee classifications. We had position descriptions, questionnaires that were submitted to and from staff, 122 individual interviews. So we did a very exhaustive process to do our best to update the classifications. The second portion of it we're just wrapping up now, and that's the compensation portion, where we basically look at total compensation for benchmark positions and match those with positions in 10 comparator agencies. The compensation that we look at includes the wages, health benefits, retirement, pay time off, so vacation and sick, you know, life insurance, dental, and other post-employment benefits, and then we match those against the other agencies and see if we're in alignment relative to the median of the other agencies. So that draft compensation information has been submitted. The union has that as well as the management staff. We're just kind of going through that right now. One of the things we're very committed to is making sure that the quality of the study is good. And so what we've agreed to with the union is to do a QA and QC process where we pick out, because they're looking at, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of positions. So we're basically picking out kind of positions in there and doing a real detailed QA and QC jointly with the union and the consultant, just to make sure that the consultant's doing this correctly and that the quality of the work is really top-notch. Once we complete that, we'll be doing the phase of kind of internally aligning positions and then making recommendations on reclassifications and compensation adjustments. We're also going to make the study available to all the employees when it's completed, so it's complete transparency. In the current schedule, we're hoping to have this phase of the work wrapped up in June and have a study that we could bring to the board in July. We have included in the budget an allowance for what we generally anticipate the changes to be, which are not huge, Based on the data right now. But we will try to get this process completed and try to get something in front of the board to look at in July. Any changes in compensation or classifications would go into effect after the board's consideration and approval, and there would not be retroactivity. So I just want to give the board an update on that. Under past and ongoing activities, SB 414, our bill, is scheduled to be taken up in Senate Appropriations Committee. The suspense file is being taken up on May 16th. If it passes out of appropriations, the bill has until May 31st to be passed out of the Senate. We did get some news yesterday afternoon that looks encouraging as far as the bill being taken off of suspense file. So it's and being passed out and put on the Senate floor. So I think we're very optimistic that this week the bill will be moving on. We also have a meeting today. Danielle is attending in Sacramento with the author's office, CMUA, and the environmental justice organizations who've had issues with the bill. We've coordinated with our legal counsel who's working on the bill to respond to some recommendations they've had for amendments, but we're pretty far apart. Essentially, our bill proposes that to form these new regional water authorities that you have a LAFCO process, and that's how you get local engagement. The NGOs have advocated for a local engagement process, and yet their amendments to our bill completely removed all the LAFCO process. So we really need to understand kind of what they're after, because it seems to be what they say in testimony and in previous correspondence is somewhat inconsistent with the amendments they're requesting. We have a coordination meeting this week with the city of Hemet's senior management to talk about the initial draft of the proposed consolidation with the water and sewer systems. Our goal for the meeting is kind of to receive their initial feedback on the methodology, the approach. We need some clarification from them on a number of issues to finalize our costs. And if there's a general agreement on the approach and we can get the information we need, we would then fairly short order schedule an ad hoc committee meeting to go over the proposal, in which we've reviewed with our ad hoc committee already. Additionally, at this meeting, we're going to be discussing the need. They are having some capacity issues right now in their water system. They're short term. The city is right now, they have most of their wells offline, either because of water quality impairments or refurbishments. So I believe, Jeff, they have one well that's active right now out of the 10. We have interconnections with them, but they're concerned, and we are concerned that for peak summer demands, they will not be able to meet demands. So we're looking at potentially constructing two additional service connections with the city system in the short term. Because we're approaching summer very quickly, I think we have a concern about the time to get that done. We've put some costs together, and we're going to sit down with the city. But we think that's very important, so we're going to put that in front of the city manager today and kind of see how they want to move forward, because time is of the essence. Under groundwater replenishment activities, we are currently recharging a lot of met water, 3,290 acre feet in the ground, this year, so we're almost, and by the end of the month, we'll complete the 2019 deliveries for the Saboba settlement deliveries, and Met wants to advance deliver the 2020 deliveries. So we're working with the other cities and water agency to schedule those pre-deliveries. The difference of opinion that we have is we'd like to get the pre-deliveries done this year and pay the current Met rate. They are concerned about having to pay the current net rate. We would prefer to defer some of the costs into the future, but it would be at a higher rate. So we're working with them to try to work that out right now. And there was a discussion at the Water Master TAC meeting, but it appears that the cities do have the money to be able to pre-purchase that water, but we just need to work through some of those issues. I'm happy to report that we are going to be able to connect some additional sites on the Quail Valley septic to sewer conversion. As you recall, we completed the project for the 149 dwelling units and have connected them to the sanitary system. We're out there doing final paving in that area, another cleanup of the site, but we do have additional grant money and budget available. So we have identified 16 parcels on La Cresta Drive, the 600-foot extension of that sewer. So that would be 9 septic conversions and 7 stub-outs, so lots right there. So it looks like we're going to be able to put that together. So we're finalizing the cost negotiations with Downing Construction, our contractor. We have confirmed that the CEQA document that we did originally will cover that, so we do not have to do additional environmental documentation or clearance. And we are in the process of reaching out to the residents and owners and securing the necessary rights of way. And or rights of entry and agreements. So that's moving forward very nicely. Lastly, I do want to report, it's pretty amazing with the cool weather, our level of conservation that we're seeing relative to our 2013 baseline is pretty amazing right now. And what it's really showing is when we have these wetter, cooler conditions, that our customers are very cognizant of their irrigation use and they're really dialing it down during the wetter, cooler conditions. So for April, our monthly demand reductions, and this is overall demand relative to the 2013 baseline, stood at 17%. April was a little bit cooler than 2013, we're seeing that. And the per capita use for April was 26% down. So we're seeing really good, steady conservation. What's even more amazing is May. In May to date, month to date, we're showing a 29% reduction in monthly demands and a 37% decrease in per capita demand. So I think, you know, it's cooler, so there's going to be less irrigation, so it's going to go down. But I think what it also tells me is our customers are not just leaving the irrigation system alone and continuing to irrigate heavily even when it's cooler. They're very cognizant of that, so we're seeing these kind of our demands kind of float down when it's cooler and come back up when it's hotter. So I think that's very encouraging to realize that our conservation outreach is really having a great effect with the customers. And that concludes my report. Are there any questions?
Just a comment. Talked to Director LaFay yesterday,
yes,
or Monday from Torrance, and
right,
did a tour, and was amazed at everything we're doing here. Mentioned Jeff Wall by name, and so anyway.
In a good way.
But anyway, thanks for
sure
to staff for doing
this. He's a good man.
Yeah.
Good catch all day.
Despite with Director.
Maybe at the next meeting we can get a little update on what Santa Ana Regional Water Quality Control Board did on their assessment of Quail Valley, where we are, where they're going to go, and what the next
on the moratorium.
On the moratorium.
That they don't call a moratorium, they call it something else.
Yeah, they call it something else.
Okay, we can move it on that because Al Lopez,
right,
or
Al Javier
attended, yeah, that meeting, and so I think we'll have an update on that.
Super.
I had a quick question.
Yes, sir.
On the classification and compensation study, if we find, if the study finds that an employee is in a classification he or she shouldn't be in or higher salary, we don't bring anybody down, right?
No, we would use a process of Y rating.
Okay.
So if an employee, we find that the comparable position somewhere else, that the employee is over 5% over the median, we would then Y-rate them, freeze their salary until cost of living caught up with that. But again, we will not Y-rate them back to the median. We'll Y-rate them to 5% over the median. So we kind of keep a band between the median and 5% over the median, and try to get everybody in that band.
If I was an employer, I'd rather hear that than, oh, we have to reduce your salary.
Yeah, no, that is not going to be our recommendation.
Right,
right.
Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you.
All right. Laura.
Nothing today, thank you.
Nick.
Actually, the update I was going to provide was the tour that we did last Friday for Director LaFave and about half a dozen of the members of the Torrance Water Commission. It was a really good tour. They were a great group. Jeff did a did a fabulous job in providing an overview of not only the desalter facilities, but the district. They had a lot of interest in brine disposal and how that works for us with the brine line and also our Desalitec brine concentrator project. So it was a good group, a good tour, and they were definitely interested in coming back and seeing the completion of the Paris 2 desalter facility.
We did have one.
Yes.
SB 998, I forgot. We did have a regional meeting here, and it was very successful. They're going to do a presentation today on it, but we had Corona, San Jacinto, Elsinore Valley, Western, all of the water agencies here, and it was very beneficial to really find out where everybody was at and if we're all on the same page. And Dan and Charles will be giving a presentation on that today.
Great. Okay. Joe.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the board. Just one item of interest. This week, the Riverside County Transportation Director reached out to us. They are advancing a study that looks at the Eatonac Expressway corridor. It's a long-term transportation project. They will essentially look at the feasibility of extending that transportation project from San Jacinto Hemet through Menifee, Paris, and ultimately to Lake Elsinore and the I-215 freeway. They would like to host a meeting this summer among all the cities and the stakeholders, and they were looking for a central location to host that meeting. So they've asked if they can have a meeting in our offices, and obviously we would be more than happy to oblige their request. So there will be a meeting sometime in June or July to accommodate the county's request to bring in all the various stakeholders to discuss the transportation project.
Yeah, that's great. That thing's been under consideration for 30 years. So
we should do that project and make my commute a heck of a lot easier.
Yeah. But it's going to be a worthwhile project for everybody in the region. Trying to get over to 15 is a zoo. So.
Well, I think they've talked to us about it before. There's an idea that certainly that area between Paris and Elsinore, and that's going to really provide substantial economic stimulation of having a through street that comes all the way over from the 215 and intersects with the 74 up there. So, yeah, I think it is a very important project to the county.
And they've talked about it at the county for the last couple of years, and then it will then involve Eastern and Elsinore as to who is best to serve some of the areas that are going to be on that corridor. So it's going to be an interesting topic. Okay. With that, we'll go to the...
Jeff have anything?
Oh, yeah, Jeff. I'm sorry. He already had his accolades.
We have collected all the four of the recycled water use agreements from the agricultural community. These are the agreements that set their allocation for the coming year. And based on that, and the fact that in the number of energy centers indicated they're not going to take as much water as they historically have in the past, and a fraction of what their allocation would have been otherwise, we're going to be reaching out to the priority four groups. We've already reached out to the priority three users, and no additional requests for water in that group. So we'll be reaching out to the priority four users in the coming week to find out how much more water utilities want to try to redistribute fairly that excess water. I think it's probably more than 2,800 feet, maybe a little more. So that's going to come up shortly, and we'll have that all wrapped up for the coming year. As you can tell, the weather's definitely been, as Paul mentioned, sales have been a little bit low right now. Sitting at about 5% more in storage right now than we typically do this time of year. So that's more water in the market.
So the energy center still has take or pay on a
correct
higher level.
But they want to reduce it down.
That's right.
Oh, that's going to be part of the negotiation as to how much we're going to reduce it down?
Yes, Dan, I'll kind of let the effort on that, but it's kind of rewritten to adjust their baseline usage down. So that's in place right at this point, so that's where you have that water.
Yeah, their existing contract has provisions that provides for a reduction in their allocation based on historical usage, and they're going to execute that provision to reduce their allocation from about 4,800. It's going to pretty much halve their allocation.
Okay.
But they'll still be required per contract to utilize 50% of whatever that allocation is, and it's on a take-or-pay basis.
Okay. Any other questions of staff?
I have a comment.
Sure.
I have a sense of unease. All these dignitaries from other water agencies coming here with the kudos and stuff. Can we make them sign something saying they will not offer a job to anyone? We don't want to lose anybody.
Yeah. Okay. With that, we'll go to agenda item 4, which is a consent calendar. We'll accept a motion and a second for approval for items 4A through 4C.
So moved. Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. We'll go to agenda item 5, which is the action calendar, 5A. Set the time and a place for a standby public hearing to initiate legal proceedings necessary to establish the water standby assessments and sewage and waste standby charges for fiscal year 2019-2020.
Okay, so we're going to have our staff member Juan Gonzalez present this item.
Okay. Hi, Juan.
The annual standby tax assessment are processed annually. This item to authorize and approve the setting of time and place to initiating legal proceedings for
okay.
No.
So where are we? We're looking for a motion.
Before we make a motion, one of the things I hear most from my constituents when they get their property tax bill is, what is the standby thing? And I would just hope that we can do a better job of explaining that to people, because it's, and one of my constituents also be my wife, who also looks at our property tax bill, and I have a hard time explaining it. So. But it's more than that in my community. So I would hope, since this agenda item came up, that we could either at our public affairs shop or somewhere have a better explanation for what this is to our customers.
So by doing this, it allows us to go ahead and publicly put it on the press and client. We usually do 2 news publications explaining what the hearing is, and so if there's any concerns and so on. And we definitely need to try to publish that.
Not that just that we're doing it, but what it is and why it appears on your tax bill and what benefit you as the customer gets out of paying that.
So we can add that information to the website under the rates and fees to add the actual explanation. So we'll work with that.
Because, again, if you're a paying customer, why am I paying a standby fee when I'm already paying my water bill?
We could add something. What is a standby fee? Why they originated, what they're used for, and
Historical context and what benefit it gets to the customer. Helpful to all of us if we can put that on our website. Mm-hmm. So
okay, we'll go ahead and add something to the website specifically on that, and that'll correlate to the public notice. And we can also again add the when the meeting date is, as well as the background on what it is, if that would be okay.
I think that'd be very helpful.
Okay,
and with that, I'll make a motion.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Perhaps there's another thought that when the bills go out for people that don't have an automatic pay, that you can put something in that bill.
A message that
we know that we've done it. And I'm sure that Julie will read it. So.
Okay.
We'll go to agenda item 5B. Approve and authorize a 5-year agreement with Worms Janitorial Services, Incorporated, in the not to exceed full term cost of $1,770,000. Dan?
Yes, so for consideration by the board this morning is a recommended agreement up to 5 years with Worms Janitorial Services. This is a sizable contract for the district. And really, janitorial services for EMWD consist of 3 main components. The basis of it being janitorial services that are performed at this facility, the call center, and all of our manned facilities, such as the regional water reclamation facilities and the water treatment facilities, after hours cleaning and
processing of all of the various buildings on a daily basis occurs at those manned facilities, as well as I'll mention in a moment at up to 40 off-site locations as well. So the contract also consists of day porter services. So we have two full-time day porters assigned to this location. They also float between this headquarters facility and the call center location. They're responsible for room setup and calendar management and break rooms and restroom cleaning and safety inspections of supplies and so forth throughout these facilities. And then the last component of the contract is for courier services. So through our central receiving and our warehouse, the courier services distribute goods and materials out to all of our water reclamation facilities, the water treatment facilities. They also handle the incoming and outgoing mailroom deliveries, as well as provide laboratory sample distribution to our lab. That's a 365-day per year piece of their contract, and that includes weekends and holidays. So it's a very involved contract, number of services beyond what we might think of as simply janitorial services. So as I mentioned, these services are performed at 40 separate locations throughout the district. The manned facilities, as I mentioned earlier, but as well the unmanned facilities. So a number of our pumping plants, lift stations, facilities such as the Education Center have restroom locations at them, and those facilities are also serviced by under this contract. The services range from, as I mentioned, daily at the manned facilities that we spoke of, as well and up to monthly for some of those unmanned and remote locations. So as is our standard practice, we released a request for proposals in February of this year under RFP number 3146. We received four proposals. Pricing was very competitive, very tight pricing, which spoke well to our scope of work, which is quite involved for a contract like this. Pricing ranged between $23,800 per month to $28,800 per month. And a very qualifications-based selection process. This is a very high-touch contract for staff in my department to both administer and to manage. So qualifications of the firms weighted heavily in our evaluation. And through that, the recommendation is that we enter into an agreement with Worms Janitorial of Corona, California. Worms has been in business for 33 years in this field. They have 80 personnel located throughout Southern California, so they're a sizable outfit. And you know, particularly, they provide strong, relevant experience and references. So the customers that they are serving, such as Riverside County, Superior Courts, and County of San Bernardino, Department of Transportation, are comparable in scope to the recommended contract that we are entering into. They also provided all of the required documentation that we requested in the solicitation. So we want to know staffing plans. How do they handle absenteeism, their vetting process for employees that they may be bringing on, their quality assurance program, a checklist for daily inspections and facilities to ensure cleanliness, and then their chemical inventory, what materials are they bringing on site to the district were required. Some of the proposals we received omitted a number of those elements. So just a summary here of the scoring criteria. As you can see, we weighted price at 25%, which was the most heavily weighted category, but also approach and understanding, quality of the proposal, the experience and qualifications of the leadership group of the firm, as well as the personnel, all factored into this evaluation. And you can see it's there under price, as I mentioned, the range was very, very competitive, with, I would say, about $100 separating the first and third highest ranked bidders or proposers here. So Worms Janitorial Services of Corona scored overall highest in the evaluation. So with the board's approval, it's recommended that we enter into up to a five-year agreement with Worms. This would be in the estimated amount of $354,000 annually. That includes contingency for factors such as price escalation, which is capped at no more than 3% per year, as well as the addition of facilities that could occur over the course of the five-year term. The total for throughout the 5 years is recommended not to exceed $1.77 million. Glad to answer any questions.
Dan, I asked this in admin committee, but just to clarify for the board, the current personnel we have at the facilities here from their old vendor will be offered jobs?
That's correct. There is actually a labor code act called the Displaced Janitorial Services Provider Act, and that requires an incoming vendor to offer employment for at least up to 60 days to the incumbent staff and then perform performance evaluations, and should those be acceptable, to extend an offer ongoing to those employees.
Okay, so we're not jeopardizing anybody's...
They have an opportunity to remain.
Okay, that's very good.
Any additional questions?
Yeah.
Could have that as a second job. I'd never be out of one. So, we have a motion and a second.
I'll move the item.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. With that, we'll go to agenda item six. C. Joe's champing at the bit, so.
I can do this very quickly.
Yeah.
Doug Sullivan, members of the board. The opportunity before the board today is to consider the acquisition of three parcels within the city of San Jacinto on the east side of the district service area. In terms of project background, the San Jacinto Valley Well Property Identification and Eval Study was initiated by senior management to enhance the district's water supply portfolio. As you know, we've made significant investment in groundwater banking within the city of San Jacinto. It's also required to complement that groundwater banking with potential production wells in the highest producing areas within our district. The target area that was developed by our water supply and planning department using our geographic information system is shown in the exhibit on the right. It's very complex. Not only does it show existing production wells, it also shows the district's water supply network in blue. And to make it even more constraining, it defines a target area there for our phase two well development program in orange. And so our staff was tasked with the challenge of finding properties on the market that could be potential suitable groundwater production sites near our water supply system, outside of what we call a zone of influence of an existing production well, and, oh, by the way, at a responsible property acquisition cost with a willing seller. So we tasked our real property division and to that end, I've asked Cheryl Sanders, our real property manager, to join me today because we have, a significant challenge to identify these properties. Cheryl Sanders and her team does a great job keeping their ears to the rail, watching the listings. Her and her staff from time to time will drive that area looking for undeveloped logs that show up on the market, and then again negotiating a responsible acquisition. The properties that we're talking about today are really on the cusp of that orange phase two area in the southwest corner shown as subject property. I want to point out that these are three residential lots that are adjacent to each other, so that total would be roughly 0.4 of an acre. Real property staff identified these three properties located within that target area. They calibrated with the supply and planning department, confirmed that these could be a potential potable groundwater production well site, confirmed that there is a storm drain running north and south in Hewitt Street, and you see the property is identified in yellow, Hewitt just south of 7th Street. They were originally listed on the open market for, I believe, $210,000. That was last year. They recently, in the last 45 days, dropped their price to $150,000 or $50,000 per lot. Cheryl's also a licensed broker and was able to do a broker price opinion and confirm that asking price. It came in about $152,000, I believe. Looking at four comparable closed acquisitions recently. So staff made this contingent offer at full asking price. It was accepted. began our due diligence, which not only confirmed that we clear title, but also that the site is clear of any environmental site assessments. And I can tell you that we haven't seen any red flags either on title or environmental site assessment. And with that, we ask the board to consider the execution by the general manager or designee of the documents needed to close escrow and any administrative work contracts needed to survey and secure the site. The site is bounded by a walk wall. Currently has concrete sidewalk, concrete curb and gutter. It has three City of San Jacinto water meters already installed, sewer in front of the street, and its sites are graded at a finished pad grade. So we felt that $50,000 per lot in terms of a construction-ready residential development is appropriate. Finally, we would proceed, if we were approved today, to fence in the area and secure the site, protect it for its future and long-term use. With that, I'll be happy to take any questions the board may have.
No questions, then. It's too bad it's not just some bare land that hasn't been developed and all the fees paid and all that. But you know, I appreciate the additional information about the pricing and confirm myself that it's accurate. So I'll move the other.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously.
Thank you.
I think there are other attributes to that site also. You know, I think Randy had a chance to look at it, and we don't have to have a blow-off pond. We don't have to have some other things. You have flood control devices that we can put that in, and so, you know, it's six of one, half dozen the other sometimes, but I appreciate all the stuff that Cheryl and you did. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
Okay. With that, we'll go to the agenda item six, which is information items. First one will be from Joe Kugler, who is Eastern's representative to Aqua.
Thank you. First of all, thank you for having me here. I want to thank the board for allowing me to represent Eastern at Aqua and WRA. It's a real honor, so thank you very much. With that, talking about Aqua, the main emphasis, of course, is the water tax. And I really don't feel that in going to the meetings that EMWD is getting enough credit for the work that's being done by Paul, Danielle, as well as some of the directors as far as what we're working to push that. So I think that needs to be a little more emphasized, and I'll do that as part of my thing as well as anyone else that can represent the district. Specifically, we just finished the conference. The attendees were 1,461, which is one of the highest I think they've had in years. And I know that Director Sullivan and Record will talk more about when they present their discussion about that. We also had a Region 9 meeting to give an update to the rest of the region as to what's going on. The big thing now, of course, is the new building that they're talking about. And the history of the existing building, and there's a picture there on the screen, is that the building was built in 1910. It was acquired by Aqua, I believe, in 1986. And I think there's only been one renovation during the time, between the time it was acquired and now. And I think, Randy, was that during your, about your time when they renovated the conference room?
Yeah.
So lots of problems with the building from the standpoint of layout.
There's no connection there, Joe.
No, I wasn't trying to. I was just trying to show you that it's only been really one update. Anyway, so they're just finding it's a difficult building to work in. The pluses are its location to the Capitol, so from the staff standpoint, can get to the Capitol. The minuses are its location, and that the area has a lot of problems. We've been asked, I've been asked by the police department to set up a camera for across the street, I guess, for all the dealings that are going on with drugs and everything else. In addition to that, there's a shelter being built behind the alleyway, right behind the building, that will house some homeless people, and the staff has to go through the alley to get to the parking lot, and there's just been a lot of problems with people urinating in the area, defecating, just a lot of problems. So they're looking, and so they're looking at a new facility, which is located at 980 9th Street. And if you have ever been to the Citizens Hotel, if you go out, look out the side, or do a 45-degree, there's a building sitting there, and that's a new building. The sales price, as shown here on the screen, is $6.3 million. And Randy, if you recall, I think one of the first meetings they had, they talked about $5 million, and somehow they got it up to 6.3. And the way they did that is they found they had additional square footage that no one ever knew about in that building, as well as the fact that a recent building in the area was sold for $275 a square foot. So as a result, multiplying the square footage, they've come up with that. Which allows some movement between 6.3 and 5 million, which was the original sort of estimate. A number of people have said they put in the cart before the horse. We should have sold the building first and then looked for new rental space, but I guess rental space is tough in that Sacramento area for the size of what they need. And so they've gone ahead and are negotiating, or have negotiated with the owners of 986 9th Street. If they sell the building for $6.3 million, there's a commission of about $300,000, escrow costs, as well as some contingencies that the new owner might want us to perform before the building is sold. In addition to that, you may recall that the member agencies donated or loaned money to Aqua to either to acquire or to refinance the building, of which we have about $67,000 that would be paid back to us. So of the $5.8 million after costs, $960,000 would be paid back to the various agencies that have loaned the money, which would still leave the association with about $5 million plus or minus, which then they're proposing to apply to OPEB and pension plan, because we have obviously some catch-up to do on that, and they feel that'll save them about $300,000 a year in accruals that are going on to the extent that those things haven't been funded. The new building, as I said, it's a 10-year lease with a 5-year renewal. It's $3.05 a square foot. There's about 12,000 square feet on the 10th floor of the building. It's quite excellent as far as from the standpoint of security, large conference rooms, as well as the layout is more acceptable to the staff. Other than that, I've also included for you, and we can go through this. I think you have copies of this presentation that you're going to look at. But the dues that we're paying right now are $40,305 for 2019. That included a 3% increase. It's scheduled to have a 2% increase over the next 3 years, and then they said lower it to a 1.5% increase as far as dues to EMW or to the rest of the association. That's pretty well it. If anyone has any questions on any of the things that I provided there or the budget, I'd be more than happy to answer it. And that's it.
Questions?
Good report.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay. With that, we'll go to 6B, which is Eastern Municipal Water District's Enterprise GIS System Update.
Thank you, President Sullivan and members of the board. I'm here today to give an update on the district's GIS efforts, both past, present, and we'll also discuss future. So the question ultimately is, what is GIS and how do we use it here at the district? Simply put, GIS is the science of where. We represent data spatially, which makes relationships between that data easier to identify. So what type of data are we talking about? We're talking about things like aerial imagery, streets, property information, service boundaries, and district assets, both assets in the ground and above ground. So some of this data can come from outside sources, like the county, and some of the data is also entered by district staff. Representing and linking this data spatially offers us a unique insight into our systems that would not otherwise be possible. And we'll talk about this a little more later in the presentation. So GIS is very important to our business. The system and its data set are used by practically every member of our staff in the course of business. Even developers and other agencies use our GIS data today. The public map portal, for instance, allows folks to self-service access to engineering drawings. And our capital improvement project fact sheets that we share with the board and the public are also generated through the GIS system. Supporting EMWD's GIS initiatives has required commitment and a great deal of effort from a large number of district departments. Could I ask those of you in attendance who received an invite to this presentation to stand, please? So without the teamwork of these departments and consulting partners, none of the efforts we're discussing today would have been possible. Information systems only plays a supporting role in all of this. The folks you see here before you are doing the heavy lifting to ensure that the district recognizes the greatest benefit from its GIS investments. If GIS were a child, this team is the village. So thank you all for your incredible teamwork and efforts. I'd also like to take a moment to thank the board, executive staff, and our general manager for the support and recognition of this very important district core system. So thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. So let's take a brief look at just a few of the accomplishments that we've made over the past few years. EMWD's GIS Day was a resounding success. We had over 100 attendees representing folks from every department here at the district. This event showcased all of the different GIS tools that we use here at the district and offered live demonstrations and even hands-on opportunities for interested attendees. It really helped the office and field staff learn about the tools that are available that are based on our GIS data and really help to kickstart discussions about how GIS can improve their operations. The web map viewer is an example of our overarching goal here at the district, which is to simplify and focus on efficiency. We previously had over a dozen individual map viewers that an employee would have to choose from, and the map viewer that we now have is very simple. One portal, allowing a user to select a role so only relevant information is displayed. Also known as Maximo, our enterprise asset management system now allows a staff member to quickly search assets and create work orders via a map instead of trying to tediously search data fields to locate a piece of property or a service. When we invest in systems that drive our business, we must commit to the upkeep of such systems. In 2018, we upgraded the entire GIS platform to remain aligned with vendor guidance, and we even recognized an unexpected benefit, which was improved performance. The district recently completed its AMI meter retrofit program, and GIS data was used to optimize the driving routes for crews performing this work to maximize their efficiency. The board also received a presentation in February about a collections cleaning tool that also uses this GIS data. The district maintains data in the GIS system going back many, many decades. So reviewing, validating, and correcting errors in this data is a never-ending job. With the various departments working together so closely, we can not only identify these issues, but determine where the issue was introduced, and if possible, work with the data owners to correct the work process to prevent future issues. Now, when we say CAD to GIS, think of it as a district that is going from individual paper engineering drawings to an interactive map that glues all these thousands of drawings together into a single, interactive, unified view. Cleaning up annotations improves the user experience by speeding up redraws and also removes clutter. It also simplifies our data entry. But there's another key reason for that measure, and it's our mobile workforce. Mobile devices have specific requirements due to limitations and the introduction of a touch screen. Decluttering the map simplifies our deployment of mobile GIS tools. The images you see here are really illustrative, but they're a good before and after example. If you'd like more details about a node shown on the map to the right, simply click or tap the item and a pop-up displays those details. Impact assessments are really only possible with a thing we call a geometric network. In a geometric network, all of the individual pipes, valves, and manholes are connected to form a true representation of each distribution or conveyance system. In a geometric network, we can quickly see upstream and downstream impacts, and during an outage, for instance, when we need to put a call out to affected customers, a list can be generated on the fly. Or, perhaps, a line breaks. The tool that you see here can quickly show which valve should be closed to best isolate that break. This type of decision could be made on the spot and in the field. Moving on to the master planning effort, in November of last year, the board approved a GIS master plan engagement with SOMAS. The major master plan phases are first to assess our current state, then to review ongoing and planned GIS efforts, then to interview the business to find common needs and identify initiatives that will deliver maximum value, and then to provide recommendations for our GIS governance and support structure, our GIS architecture, data management practices and opportunities, and our GIS application portfolio. We expect to come back to the board in late calendar quarter three, where we will essentially be bringing a master plan with recommendations to include organizational, governance, and technical findings and recommendations, a project portfolio and phasing plan, and a budget and timeline. So again, I'd like to thank the board for this opportunity and to thank the staff and vendors in attendance. With that, if there are any questions.
Do you have any questions of Mike?
No, it's great. Great.
Yes.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Mike. Okay. With that, let's take a 10-minute break.
Okay.